Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hey guys, this is Nina Perez and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Thank you so much for being here. This show is created to discuss life topics, to grow, challenge, and transform your thinking. And today I found someone who is like full of so much knowledge and is so interesting. I'm so excited to have this conversation. And his name is Dr. Rick Cromie, and I hope I said that right. He is a historian. He's an author of dozens of books. He's in leadership, Imagineer. He's an inspirational edutainer. I had to learn how to say that a couple of times. He is the founder and president of MANA, and his mission is to help people interpret history, navigate culture, and explore faith. I am so, so glad you're here with me this evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. Nursing a little bit of a head cold all week long, but having more fun than I should be allowed to have.
Yeah. That's awesome. Let me put my mic over here. Where are you at right now? What part of the world?
I live in Boise, Idaho.
Okay. My friends are moving to Idaho. I'm like, Idaho?
Yeah. the whole world's excited. Moving to Idaho.
That's what I hear. I hear you guys are really like, you know, developing a lot over there. So there you go.
Well, we get confused with Iowa. So we're drawing maps for people to go to wherever, to go to Iowa instead, thinking that that's Idaho.
That's so funny. I believe that. I believe that. Most of us who are from the East Coast stay in the East Coast. So I believe you. So, Rick, the way I always like to start off is for us to get to know you a little better. Yep. So my audience gets to know who Rick is. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a small town guy from Central Montana who grew up basically around cowboys and maybe even a few Indians out there as well. Montana is a wonderful place to be from. It really shaped a lot of my values, a lot of my, I learned how to work hard as a kid. And, you know, I just grew up in a very small town where everybody knew everybody else's name. And it's kind of a Norman Rockwell type of small town. And, you know, I've been a pastor for a lot of my life. That's kind of where I started out in my career area, but eventually a professor of church ministry, leadership and such. Wow. Several years ago, started doing some writing and speaking and started moving out more into the general market. And now I train leaders and teachers, do a lot in the area of education as well. Still do pastoral training and also work with parents.
You know, wow. So just little things. You're not busy.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Well, I'm basically a jack of all trades, master of none. That's truly me.
That's funny. So how did you get into doing pastoral work? Is faith something that's always been a part of your life? You grew up this way?
Well, you know, I always tell people that if you've got a grandma that's praying for you and it's all about God, you know, just give up now because you know, you're not going to beat your grandma's prayers. I grew up in the church. It was just for me. a natural part of my life. And, you know, I struggled with my faith as I like most people do, you know, as far as understanding, you know, where God fits and, you know, just dealing with some of the harder issues and how that translates into different questions that we all deal with.
Yeah.
But for me, my faith, particularly in Jesus Christ, just continued to be a source of hope, a source of peace, a source of strength and joy. So, you know, I had my moments, but as I worked through different obstacles in my life, but somehow I always just kept coming back to the simple truth of how Jesus transforms people. And in my life, he certainly has been transformative.
Yeah. When you say that you were, you know, kind of going through those struggles in your life, can we talk about that a little bit? Do you mind if we dig into that? Okay.
Yeah.
I like to dig into who people, you know, were or what they've gone through in their life, right? Because faith does play a big part in my life as well. But I was just wondering, like, when you went through some of the struggles, and if you'd like to share them, I would love to hear them. How, you know, what actually shifted you to question it? If you grew up in the church, right? You grew up in the household, right? When an obstacle came, or what the obstacle was, what made you kind of question your faith in God?
Well, my first, is it really an obstacle? It was just an event. When I was 12 years of age, I came home from junior high school and my mom had abandoned the family. She had run off with a lover and she was gone. And that was like the fall of the year. And we didn't hear it. We had no idea. Now I understand now later that the adults in the room kind of knew where she was at, were tracking her. But as a kid, I had no idea where she was at. All I knew was the mess that she left behind. And to be abandoned by your mother is quite a heart wound. You know, we talk about that father wounds, and I already had a father wound because my dad was ADD. He was absent dad disorder.
Oh, and, wow. Never heard that one.
Yeah. Well, he was.
I had that too.
Yeah. Well, he was a trucker. And he was gone all week.
So was mine. No, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so when he was home, usually I was the remote control to turn the TV channel or get him a beer or something like that. But when my mom left, that really was hard. And I don't remember it being so much with my faith, you know, because what happened was my church kind of stepped in. My church stepped in and became my mom and my dad and my, you know, my grandparents on my mom's side actually brought us into their home and we lived with them, you know.
But were you, but was up to the point of 12, was your faith foundation because of your mother? Like, is that how you came to faith, because of that?
No, yeah. And see, that's the thing. It was my grandparents.
Okay.
My grandmother was she came to faith in Jesus in her adult years, and she became very, you know, I mean, we went to church religiously. I mean, people go to church, but we went to church religiously. Sunday morning, Sunday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, sometimes every night of the week we went to church. And it wasn't a hardship for me. It was really, you know, I look forward to it. My friends were all there.
Yeah.
And I was in a real small church, maybe 100 people. We all knew each other's names. It was very deep community. Sundays, we'd often eat at the church. Mm. Everybody bring something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the hard part, and you could, you know, probably attest to this. I think the hard part about this is that when you're abandoned by your parent like that, it is really, really hard to trust God. I think because the people that you're supposed to trust that are physically there are not there. Right.
Yeah. And I'm very sorry, Mike.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
For some reason, Maya. Having a problem right now with my throat.
Do you want to take a second?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Please.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something you can edit out or not, but
yeah, I'll edit it. It's not a problem.
Okay.
In fact, I'll write it.
We may have to work around that tonight. For some reason, I'm having a little bit of problem, but
Don't you worry about that, Rick.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was like that on one of my interviews too. It was awful because it starts to tickle. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, I know. This is really kind of a first, and I've been doing these all week. So,
but maybe that's why, right? You've been doing them all week, and you haven't given yourself time to like heal. And we could definitely. Oh.
It's in there.
There you are. Oh, and you're clear.
Am I?
Yeah. You actually look better. That's funny.
There you go. Well, I just said a prayer. God, get me through this.
Right.
And make me clear. So, man. Okay.
It's completely fine. I mean, listen, if you want to just reschedule for another time, we could too. If you're okay, if you're up for it, it's up to you.
Well, let's give it another 5 minutes and we'll see.
Okay.
But, yeah. You know, I don't want to be a burden. And
you are not a burden
in that regard. All. But it's just I'm a perfectionist in some of this stuff, and I just want to be what you need me to be. Yeah.
So. No, I'm a perfectionist too, but this is good, right? Because this is a great way to get us out of that. Because
yeah.
I mean, sometimes being a perfectionist can really be a downfall. You know, it could be a good thing, and it could be a downfall, right?
So remind me again of your last question, if you can remember.
I said the abandonment, being abandoned can really cause you to not trust God, right? Yeah. Because the people that are supposed to be there, the ones you're supposed to trust, rely on, are not there. And when your mom did what she did, just kind of up and left, that leaves a gaping hole. And it also leaves questions like why, right? So I'm sure that was a struggle for you, especially at 12. And then I know you're going to church and everything else, but still there has to be some lingering question there. Like, why would God even allow this? If there's even a God, can you really trust him? Did you go through any of that?
Yeah, absolutely. For me though, as I became a perfectionist, I literally dived into my faith and my religion and thought that, you know, in many ways, I viewed God like my dad. And I often say that we do tend to have a theology that revolves around our father. You know, for me, he being Father God, obviously in the Christian perspective. And that creates a problem because my dad was abusive.
Right.
My dad was aloof. My dad was, you know, he was distant. He was demanding. He was, you know, if I didn't do everything right, I'd get punished. And so that was my view of God. So I think my father kind of defined my faith more than my mother did. Mm. You know, her abandoning me and abandoning the family, that was a painful personal wound. Right. And it created issues that I had to deal with relationships around me, because what happened was I couldn't trust anybody.
Right.
And the people that said they loved me, you know, it's hard when, you know, my mom said she loved me and then she left me.
Right.
And every relationship I had, when I sensed that someone was going to leave, I would leave first.
Mm.
You know, girlfriends, I would leave first. You know, I had a lot of relationships I really messed up.
Did you have anything past a dating relationship? Like, were you ever married and then had to... Oh, you did. Okay. So did that end in divorce as well, or?
Yeah, I got married when I was 20, and we had, you know, I thought I was married for life. In fact, you know, on my end of it, it was even though the marriage itself was not great at times, it was good. You know, I always look back on I was married for 30 years, Nina. And then I was abandoned by my wife. She literally walked out the door one night. And never came back. And that was the one where I really questioned why. But I wasn't questioning God.
Right.
I was questioning her. But it was really tough, because for me, my abandonment issues were also driving certain addictions in my life, because you have to mask the pain in some way.
Right.
And for me, masking that pain, you know, through addictive behaviors became my solution, if you will.
Yeah.
And the process that didn't help. In fact, I would wake up the next day with even more guilt, more shame, struggling with who I really was. And
that's deep.
Yeah,
that's deep. And you know, like, and it's also real. What you're talking about is real stuff, right? And you know, I think a lot of people don't like to talk about that because it's just too sensitive and too hard. But you actually got into leadership because you became. You also said you were a pastor at some point, right? So were you a pastor during all of these transitions, or did you do this after? Oh, no, during.
That's even harder. I worked out all of these kinks.
Wow.
In the airplane as I was flying it, you know, dealing with my issues.
Wow.
I wrote my first book at 25 years of age. It was a best-selling book. It was, you know, when I look back on it, I always say people talk about writing books, and I've been writing books, you know, like I said, since 25. And, you know, it was actually easy for me. I didn't understand it back then. It was, you know, today, you know, I look at what I did. It's akin. I always tell somebody it's akin to jumping into a boat, going out in the middle of the lake, throwing out a lure with, you know, and just catching the biggest fish in the lake by accident.
Right.
That was my first book.
Wow.
You know, that type of success just doesn't come. And in many ways, I had success too early in life, you know, because as my life went up, 2007, I was at the top of my game. I had my doctorate in my hand. I just earned my doctorate. I was an executive director at a Christian university, and everything was working in my favor. My phone never stopped ringing. I was speaking all over the country. You know, everything was going right. And then, boom, the recession hit. That job was a bust. I couldn't find work. I'm 45 years old. I'm told I'm too old. I've got too much education. I've got too little, you know, whatever. Everything. There was something too with me all the way through. And I never had that experience before. And then in 2013, my wife walks out.
Wow. So did you ever look back and see the highs and lows of all you've been through, Rick, and see, like, did your relationship and your faith, was it high when you were high and then low when you were low, or was it opposite for you? Like opposite.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I think it was steady all the way through. For me, it was steady. It was a steady source of strength. When my wife walked out, I started, first of all, I'd been in a year of recovery at that point. She walked out after I'd already done a lot of work on myself. And I think that was part of the issue, not to get it too much into her story, but you know, I think she just couldn't fix me anymore. I had found something else that was fixing me, and it was real and it was working. And I was in recovery and everything was going good. But for her, our marriage, you know, our relationship just wasn't. And, you know, she had her reasons. But when she walked out, it actually was a divine pruning in my life, because how God used that was the things that had he was wanting me to go in a direction that she didn't want to go. We were, you know, if you understand biblical terms and ideas, we were unequally yoked, you might say. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of just two people that we were on different planes, and it just wasn't working. And I don't fault her. I mean, she's happily married, remarried, and has a wonderful life. And I spent about a year kind of in a loss. I call it the lost year, as I tried to understand what God was doing in my life. But then I met a gal on eHarmony, no less. And we just immediately connected. And she was totally in as far as following what God wanted to do in our lives. And at that point, I mean, everything just shifted for me. I mean, everything changed. Talk about beauty from ashes.
Right.
Beauty from ashes. That's what happened here. That's my story. And now I run a nonprofit faith-based organization. I speak. I've done more traveling all over the world in the last 10 years. You know, things. The divorce was a point that moved me in a different direction. But I think God was working there.
Yeah.
You know, he takes our bad circumstances and turns them into good if we're patient.
Yeah.
You know, I just tell people, do the next right thing.
Right.
If you're in that moment, just do the next right thing, because I think that's where the wise always get. I wrote something. I'm a writer, and I like to write little pithy things. But when there's a fork in the road, the wise person always goes to the right. Always takes the right. Just do the right thing.
I like that. You know? I like that.
For me, it works.
Right.
There are a lot of forks in the road.
Yeah.
And a lot of them can take you down some really dark spaces. And I've been in those dark spaces.
I'm sure.
I've been in those places. Yeah.
I'm sure. So as a pastor, when your wife walked out, were you still a pastor at that time?
Yes. And I lost all my work except for one job.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah.
Yeah. Economically, it was the worst time of my life. I got to tell you a little bit more about my mom, though, because my mom, when she finally started to make a come about a year after she left, she tried to come back into our lives. And I refused. I just said, you hurt me too much, you know,
right.
But being the good Christian boy that I was, and eventually a pastor, I realized you can't hate your mom
right.
and love Jesus. You know, you kind of right. have to, that doesn't work. So I eventually got to the point where I said, Mom, I'll tell you what, I'm going to love you as much as I can, but I'm going to take care of you, but you're never going to hear me say these words. I love you. You're never going to hear those, not in this lifetime.
Right.
That will be my way of getting you back, basically, is what I was telling her.
Right.
For what you did to me. So I carried that pain, that anger, that bitterness for decades.
It's funny, right? Because you prefaced it by saying you can't not love your mom and love Jesus, but at the same time you didn't forgive, really. Right?
No, that was the problem.
Yeah.
And then at eight, when I was 50 years old and a complete train wreck of a person, I went into recovery. And in the recovery work, part of the process is you eventually have to do amends. And as I looked at my life, as I looked at the people that hurt me and I had to forgive them, and I looked at the people that I have hurt and I have to, you know, offer my amends and offer forgiveness, you know, will you forgive me? With my mom, I realized I had to forgive her. Mm-hmm. And on Mother's Day of 2014, I called her up and I just said, Mom, I'm going to give you the Mother's Day gift you've been waiting for all your life. I just want you to know, I love you.
Aww.
And I felt a weight come off of me that had been there for decades.
Wow.
And a releasing. And I felt, you know, and my mom and I, we'd always had this, you know, tension. In fact, she just liked to talk.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, a lot of times I would just call her and she'd get talking. I could drive for hours as she's just talking in my ear. You know, it was a great way to waste time. But we had actually our first conversation. Wow. And she asked me to forgive her for the pain that she caused. And I said, Mom, it's forgiven. I forgive you. And from that point on, we had a wonderful relationship. And I only say, you know, say that because it wasn't that much longer. Maybe a year and a half later, she passed away.
You would have missed that opportunity.
And it was a window. And my dad, same thing. My dad, we had a moment where we had to battle it out. I had to deal with his abusiveness and I had to confess, hey dad, these things were very hurtful. And we had that moment and he doesn't even remember some of it.
Right.
And I realized I still have to forgive you.
Yeah.
I love what Jesus said from the cross. Father, forgive them for they don't know what they're doing.
They do. Yeah.
And sometimes you just have to do that. I mean, that forgiveness. Yeah. So my dad and I, he's still alive. We end every conversation with, I love you. And
isn't that awesome?
He never said that to me as a kid. I never heard, I love you. I never heard, I'm proud of you.
Right.
My dad's proud of me now and he loves me.
Isn't that something? And it's something because even in our age, we still want that. We still want that. Right. So, you know, the funny thing is you said that when you said, Mom, I love you, and that weight lifted off. And then you just think, no wonder the Lord says to forgive, because you're walking around with this weight that was unnecessary for so long, right?
And I put those chains on me.
Yeah.
That was my choice. And then I tried to remove the chains using all sorts of different addictive behaviors, whatever it might be. Some quite damaging, by the way.
Yeah.
And nothing worked.
Well, nothing I mean, works. Addiction in itself is a destructive thing, right? Regardless right. of what the addiction is, right? It's yeah. it's literally enslaving you to whatever it is, right? Yeah. That addiction. So that's pretty in depth because you were able to get through that. But there's a sense of freedom that comes with something like that, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah. the freedom that comes with that. That yeah. probably, and I don't know if this is a true statement, but I would think that that would catapult you into you. Really walking into whatever it is you're supposed to be doing, right? Did you feel that?
Yeah. What it did was it freed me to really love my wife, Linda, now, you know, because I spent 30 years emotionally insecure with my ex-wife. You know, we just had an emotionally insecure relationship. Mm-hmm. And that emotional insecurity, I learned, was what would trigger me to pursue many of the addictive behaviors that I pursued over the years. And also it was a part of how I would be paranoid. You know, if I again yeah. felt that a relationship was starting to fray, maybe a job was starting to go sour or an opportunity or something I was doing, I would always leave before I got left. I would run mm-hmm. before I got run over. Mm-hmm. You know, I would hurt before I got hurt.
Right.
I was a hot mess.
Right. Aren't we all? So now does your new, you said Linda's your wife, right?
Yeah. Linda's my yeah. wife. We've been married now. Well, we actually have just had our eHarmony anniversary, 7 years.
That's
7 years.
So great. Oh, I love it. I love it. Do you feel, do you ever have to wake up and battle that again, right? That fear of abandonment, that fear of, you know, being run over, like that kind of stuff. Is that something that you have to like put on the cross all the time? Or is this something yeah. you feel like you've settled with God and you're good now? How do you feel about that?
I think that stuff I've settled. What I deal with now more than anything is the validation. Mm-hmm. Part of my response, emotional response in life was applause. I was an actor in high school. I did theater. And so to go on stage, I found that I could put a mask on and I could, through my lines, by saying them in a certain way, I could make people laugh. I could make them cry. In other mm-hmm. words, I could manipulate applause. And mm-hmm. there was no better feeling than that when that curtain call happened and you gave your bow and the audience stood on their feet and applauded you. And I became addicted to those type of highs. When I talk about addiction, that's one of the things I was addicted to. I was addicted to applause.
Wow.
And the problem with that is that translates, for example, Facebook, mm-hmm. Even to this mm-hmm. day, there's sometimes
on Facebook, that. Yeah.
I'll mm-hmm. write something out and it'll be brilliant. Absolutely brilliant stuff. But when nobody likes it, and I call it the 15-minute rule. If nobody likes it within 15 minutes, I'm going to remove it. They don't deserve that type of wisdom, I guess.
They don't deserve it.
They don't deserve it. Now, there might be nobody out there. I may just have put it out there at the wrong time.
Yeah.
But or maybe Facebook algorithms being what they are, they're just going, yeah, it's a Chromie today. I don't know. But the bottom line is I hear people all the time that come, I read everything you write. I love what you write. I'm going, well, then you need to like it, because if you don't like it, I'm basically going crazy on my end. So, yeah, I still deal with it.
That is so real. Oh, my God, Rick, that is so real. Right. Because I think that is one of the things that has shifted a lot in this new era we're in. Right. Is.
Yeah.
It's the applause, or, you know, putting something out there that's not even really you, but you, because it got good traction or people liked it. So that's who you're trying to morph into. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. So if you're still dealing with that, then I'm assuming that you have to, you know, kind of catch yourself, because you still are on stages. You still are speaking to lots of people, yeah. right? You're yeah. still bringing mm-hmm. wisdom out. You're still leading pastors and leading leaders, right? So I'm sure that that's something you have to kind of check yourself on to make sure that mm-hmm. you're doing the work because of the integrity of the work and what yeah. you want to do, and not for the applause, right?
Yeah. And what I've learned more than anything is I look at my applause as well as criticism. See, the other side is criticism. Mm-hmm. You know, you write stuff and then all of a sudden people start criticizing you. I have people all the time say, I'd love to write. I'd love to be a writer like you. I'm going, yeah, right.
Right.
You know,
you're right.
Most people criticize you as a leader. I get way more criticism than get compliments. It's a very lonely job at the top, if you might say, but for me, I've learned not to make my applause nor my criticism. I don't idolize either one.
Good.
You know, I don't make either one, you know, the reason I do everything. In fact, every day I have a simple prayer. I just want to get up and inspire somebody.
Yeah.
I just want to show the light, shine the light. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to shine the light in people's eyes just to get the attention, but I want to make a little dent in the world every single day. So today, this hour, this moment, it's with you, Nina.
Right. No, this is a great conversation. So you are, no worries on that. But I really like that. I like that you really are looking at it like, you know, who can I impact today? Who can I impact today? As opposed to who's going to applaud me today, right? Who's going to read my post before I delete it?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It just, in the end, it's I love what Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes. It's chasing the wind. Mm. You know, he had everything, by the way. You read Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who had absolutely everything. Yeah. He had all the money, all the women, all the power, all the land, all the riches, and everything. And at the end, he says, I'm miserable.
Yeah. That's right. You know,
I'd love to be miserable like that for one, just one day. Let me be miserable like that, God. But hey,
right.
What I love more than anything and what drives me more than anything is I just have a desire to help people. In the last year, I've fallen in love with history. So I do a lot of interpretation of history, and my new book on generations and technology, it's all about helping people understand generations. And I love that, and helping navigate culture and stuff. That's who I am.
But
I also still explore faith with people.
Right. You know? Yeah. I mean, well, that's in you, right? It's built in you. I mean, you know, your faith is part of you. So, So you're no longer pastoring, right?
Well, actually, in about an hour, I'm going to be at a life group, a church for people who don't go to church.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's really great.
We meet tonight and we'll gather for a time of fellowship. And I think tonight we're going to dive into the Bible story of Jesus' birth and just take a look at that. That'll be fun because it's Christmas.
Yeah, it's almost Christmas. Exactly.
Yeah. Why not? And then we have a time of prayer where we spend time in prayer with each other. And then we take the Lord's Supper. So in that regard, but there are a lot of people in our group that don't go to church anywhere.
Okay.
And we are that fellowship.
Wow.
So that's been my 2020 COVID moment. I just had a brain, you know, thought that, you know, there are a lot of people who aren't going to church, but what they're craving is the community.
Community. So yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what churches, you know, was built on, right? It's that community, that gathering of one another and like being there to support one another, even though now we're doing it all virtually, which it's okay. Right. I kind of like being around the church, you know, feeling and people, but
where you're at, I don't know where you're at, but here in Idaho, we never closed down.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. We closed down. We're in Connecticut. We closed down.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're reopening. A lot of places are reopening back up, and it's nice. But now you're almost shifted a little bit. Like Sundays, you're actually staying home a little more and not going to church like that. You know, everybody's mindset has shifted. I had one question for you, though, Rick.
Yeah.
Do you feel, you know, as a person of faith and a person who's out there inspiring others and leading others, do you feel like God gives you a purpose and a plan while you're here on earth, or do you feel like you kind of make your way as you go yourself?
That's a theological question. And
yes,
what I believe is that, you know, when it comes to understanding God's purposes, first of all, we don't know God's purposes. And a lot of times God's will, what's God's will for my life? Well, that's a very selfish question when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, my life. You know, the fact that God even pays attention to me is a miracle in my thinking. So I look at God's purposes like the Grand Canyon. You know, what does he really want? He wants me to be in relationship with him,
yep.
And he wants me to glorify him. So that's a pretty wide canyon.
Yeah.
But down at the bottom, I do think that there's this raging river wild, which is kind of a more specific will or purpose that God has for our lives. And for those of us who dare to dip our toes into that and get swept away by the waters of that raging river of God's specific purpose for our lives, he can take us places we would never imagine.
Right.
I never imagined I would be doing what I'm doing today when I was 20 years of age.
Right.
Never imagined it.
It probably feels right too, doesn't it? It probably just feels like this is your thing right now, right?
I wake up, I can't wait to go to work and figure out what I'm going to do.
Isn't that awesome?
And I've never made less money in my life.
Right.
I've never been more broke in my life. You know?
That's hilarious.
I shouldn't say that. The funny thing is that God has amply supplied.
Right.
I actually have more money in the bank than I've ever had in my life.
Right.
I live in a house. Yeah, we bought the beautiful house I live in right now. We're debt free. We don't owe a thing on it.
Oh, fantastic! Yeah. You got a beautiful wife. You got a fully paid house. You got God on your side. You are doing really, really well. And I love that you are, you know, diving into people's lives in this way. I mean, they're really great, tangible ways. What you're doing tonight with your group, the book that you wrote, right? On, I think it was on generations and technology, yeah. Right? I was reading a little bit of it. It sounds really interesting. I think I'm going to go ahead and go on there and get me a copy. Because there was a, you know, you dive into all the generations, like Generation X and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, wow. I'm Generation X. I have to read about that a little bit. So
it's fun. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, and just for your audience sake, if you're interested in purchasing GenTech, go to rickcromie.com. You'll probably have that somewhere in this. But go to my website. For what you would pay at Amazon, I'll send it to you as well. But I can autograph it for you.
Oh, so
if you buy it through my website, I autograph it for you. And it's more personal that way. And that's also how I roll. I like to make things personal and develop relationships. I don't think this is going to be the end of our conversations, Nina. Half an hour is not enough.
I hope not. It sure isn't. But I want to thank you for spending this time with me, because I know that you were a little tiny bit under the weather and you have a group to go to next. And I'm like, your 50th podcast this week or something. But I really, really appreciate your time. I really do. I appreciate your time and your wisdom. And I thank you for spending this time with me.
Thank you, Nina.
So everybody can go just to rickcromie.com and then find everything there, or is there other areas we should look at?
Just start there. Start there. And then I do have a faith-based organization called MANA Educational Services International. That's a different website, but rickcromie.com is the place to start to get to know me.
All right, great. I'm so glad we met. So glad. And guys, thank you for being here with us tonight. This was so much fun. So I'm going to make sure that Rick's information is all linked below so that you can go ahead and click on there, go visit his site, visit if you like to. I think you can get booked for speaking engagements and stuff that as well, right?
Yeah, I would. That's why I do this, you know. I love to come out and share with businesses and organizations and schools. I do schools as well.
That's amazing.
I'd love to come and train your parents or your parents, your teachers, your pastors, your leaders, whatever it is.
Right. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yes, please. Make sure that you look him up and go ahead and grab his book too. And if you're going to grab it from his site, because how amazing would that be to just get a nice autograph book? So thank you guys for being here. This is Nina Perez. This is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Until next time.
This broadcast is brought to you by WinJex Studios. We are an all-in-one educational platform for podcasters that revolutionizes how hosts leverage content to increase engagement with listeners, downloads, and income. We come together to focus on community, collaboration, and collective impact. For more information on how you can interact directly with our hosts, access exclusive live content with offers you can't get anywhere else from our official partners, join our purpose-driven community by visiting www.winject.com. If you're ready to build a career doing what you love, then we're ready to see you there.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.